And you need to take this home and soak your heart in it and meditate on it and connect with it so that you can advance in the process, right? Because that's what we've been talking about, is the process, the series of steps that are taken in order to change, grow, develop, and mature. And if you stop and think about it, doesn't this series fit so perfectly for the word that the Lord gave us this year? What was our word this year? Do you remember? Teething. I love that. Somebody has been paying attention and taking notes. Teething. That's our word for the year. That's what the Lord wants to do in us. And so this series is great because it's helping us navigate through the painful, slobbery mess of cutting teeth, as it encourages us to stay in the process. Because while teething is a process, it is a part of the overall process. It's a process in the process, right? Because you don't just wake up one morning with a mouthful of teeth, correct? I mean, that would be nice, but that's not how it works. And so you've got to stay with the process as your teeth slowly, bit by bit, one by one, they drop in. So hang with the process. So today I want to talk to you about another aspect of the process that I feel like is really important. I want to talk to you about disappointment. In my opinion, disappointment has got to be one of the hardest things to navigate through in life. And it is impossible to move forward in the process if you do not know how to handle disappointment properly. The reality is, none of us like disappointment. None of us want disappointment. None of us look forward to disappointment. Nobody gets up in the morning and say, boy, I really hope I get disappointed today. I'm just ready for a really good disappointment, aren't you? Nobody says anything like that. But the problem is we all experience it. We all have those times in life when our hopes are unfulfilled and we have unmet expectations and things don't work out the way we planned. We all experience delay, we experience setback, and the result of that is we feel sad, we feel discouraged, we feel maybe even disillusioned when we experience disappointment. However, it is an unavoidable part of the process, and I think that we need to come to terms with that. Because a lot of us spend our lives trying to set ourselves up so that we would avoid disappointment. Strategically planning and organizing and structuring our life in such a way that everything always comes through. I think that some of us even feel like that because we follow Jesus, because we're in this relationship with Him and we are purposing to be Spirit-led, that we should have minimal disappointment. In fact, we think, some of us think, that it should be just negated altogether. That when we follow Him, we shouldn't have disappointment because we have an inside track. We've got insider information. And so it should never happen to us. But the reality is, it does not matter how closely you follow Jesus and how in tune you are with Holy Spirit, you are going to experience loss. You're going to experience criticism and have betrayals and no frustrations, and you'll have setbacks and delays, and you will come against closed doors. Doors that are not just closed, but cemented shut. You're going to find yourself in situations where your hopes are not fulfilled and your expectations are not met. You're going to find yourself in circumstances when God doesn't meet your expectations. When He doesn't do what you think He should do, what you asked Him to do, what you wanted Him to do, there will be times that He just flat out says no and doesn't give you an explanation for that. There will be times that you're disappointed because you've been pursuing your own agenda. You've been running after your own heart instead of running after His. And so because of that, He doesn't fund it. He doesn't equip it or empower it or enable it, and it just comes all apart. There will be times that you are disappointed because you just got it wrong. You thought you heard God. Man, this is the story of my life right here. You thought you heard God. You thought you were going in the right direction. You thought you were doing the right thing, but you just misunderstood. You weren't You weren't listening quite well enough. You weren't completely in tune. And there are going to be times that you did hear and you heard it right. But in your excitement, in your anticipation, you got ahead of God. And you didn't stop and ask for, well, who, what, when, where, and how. Right? Those are key questions. When God begins to speak to you, you need to not just jump off and start running, but you've got to stop and ask, okay, what's the plan? What are you doing and how are you moving and when is this supposed to take place? Because when we don't do those things, we get ahead of God and we experience disappointment and the results are we're shocked and we're stunned. Sometimes we're even devastated. And we'll say things like, people failed us. We'll even say that we failed, that we are a failure. But more often than not, what do we say? God failed me. He didn't show up. He left me hanging. He didn't come through for me. He didn't do what he said he was going to do. He didn't do what I expected him to do. And the results of that are we just abandon the process. We just get right out of the flow. And if we're going to be really honest, usually we cross our arms and we sit down on the side of the road of process and we pout. Let's just be real. We pout because we did not get our way. You see, disappointment is a natural part of the process. And we are going to experience some form of disappointment throughout our life. And you will not like it. You are not supposed to like it. You're not supposed to enjoy it. But you are supposed to embrace it. Because how you navigate through disappointment will determine how much you grow and how far you go in the process. You see, disappointment feels very negative, but in actuality, it's a double-edged sword. It has both beneficial and detrimental consequences, and you get to choose what those consequences are going to be. Do you hear what I'm saying? It's a double-edged sword containing both beneficial and detrimental consequences, and you get to choose which of those it's going to be. So let me explain for you. It's detrimental in that it's the perfect opening for the enemy to step into your circumstances and sabotage the process in your life. In fact, the enemy will go so far as to set you up for disappointment and then exploit that disappointment in hopes of derailing you. He does things like this. He'll step in and he'll take advantage of all those negative emotions that are stirring as a result of your disappointment. And there's plenty of negative emotions. And he'll pull you into a downward spiral through those emotions because your emotions can be manipulated so easily. He'll pull you into this downward spiral of depression and distrust and dysfunction as he stirs up anger and bitterness and resentment. I think God is speaking to us about depression and bitterness today because those were in my message and nobody knew that. I believe that probably more than likely the root of most depression is disappointment. Not 100%. But pretty close. It's disappointment. And he takes advantage of that and sucks you into this vortex of negativism. He steps into the situation and he keeps us so deeply entrenched. Listen, I didn't know the set list for today and they didn't know my message, but did we not start off with, I'm not looking to the left, I'm not looking to the right, I'm not looking behind me, I'm looking straight ahead. Because in our disappointment, the enemy only wants you to keep your attention on the back and what did not happen. That's all he wants you to look at is what did not happen and get you so entrenched in yesterday that you can't trust God for tomorrow. Disappointment is going to rob you. It's going to rob you of trust. And without trust, you have no courage to operate in faith. If I'm just hooked into what didn't work out for me, there's no way that I can step into what God is working out for me. He keeps us so entrenched in yesterday that we have difficulty trusting God for tomorrow. And then in that, he uses disappointment to steal our vision, crush our hopes, and stifle our passions, preventing us from fulfilling our destiny and the calling that God has on our life. Wow. With our disappointment, he is continually drawing our attention to that situation so that we constantly think of God in negative light, thinking about what he didn't do. He could have. God could do anything, and he did not do that for me. Keeps us tangled up in that, and so therefore we won't dream with God. We won't explore the possibilities with God. We won't partner with him and do with him what he's doing right now. He uses disappointment to prevent us from hooking up with the promises of God. Did you know that there are more than 7,000 promises in the Bible? More than 7,000. Just to give you an idea, put that in perspective for you, that is one brand new promise a day, every single day of the year for more than 20 years. There is more than enough for you to hook your heart to, but you'll never be able to do it if your heart's hooked in disappointment. You see, in essence, what the enemy is doing is he's using disappointment as a breeding ground for spiritual disease. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12. I love the paraphrase in the message. It says, unrelenting disappointment leaves you heart sick. Unrelenting. Absolutely. There are times in your life when disappointment is unrelenting because wave after wave, new situations are constantly coming against you, hitting you with a barrage of disappointment. We all have seasons where that's happening back to back to back to back. But do you also know that unrelenting is true in the sense that the enemy is taking one disappointing situation from your past and just keeps beating you over the head with it? And it's unrelenting. It's the same thing, but he just won't stop beating you over the head with it. And it makes you, this word tells us, it makes you heart sick. Or could we say it makes your heart sick? What happens when your physical body gets diseased? The natural, normal processes of that system stops to operate in a healthy, normal way, right? It puts a stop to function, and it disables you, correct? Same thing is true for you spiritually. When you become sick with disappointment, then it stops the normal operating processes of God in your heart, in your life, in your soul. And it puts a stop to what God is doing in your life, bringing the process to a screeching halt. The enemy is using disappointment as a breeding ground in our lives for spiritual disease. But on the flip side of that, disappointment is very beneficial because in disappointment, there's unlimited potential. We need to stop and change the lens at which we're looking at disappointment from and understand that disappointing circumstances house unlimited opportunities to bless you and to enhance your life. And the Bible is full of examples when circumstances that were disappointing could have been detrimental, but instead they became beneficial. They became valuable experiences that created a greater awareness of God and developed more opportunities to interact with God and experience the supernatural. Perfect example of this is Joseph. Look at the life of Joseph. And if you're not familiar with his life, you can read about it. In fact, I encourage you to read about it. It's found in Genesis chapter 37 through chapter 50. And it is a powerful story of a man whose life was wave after wave after wave of disappointment. And it all started for him one day when, completely unaware that all of his older brothers had something against him, offense. Where is it? Offense. They were offended by him. They caught him unaware and threw him into a pit where they were going to leave him to die. Now, the Bible doesn't necessarily use the word disappointment in conjunction with Joseph, but I can just imagine if it were me and I had been thrown in a pit, I'd be pretty disappointed. Right. Don't you think? Yeah. I'd be really disappointed because it was my brothers. Yeah. And I can just imagine he's at the bottom of this pit and he realizes they've left me. I've heard them say they're leaving me here to die, but then hope springs alive. when he hears their voice coming back. And he realizes they're pulling him out of the pit. And he's like, okay, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. They rethought this and realized it wasn't a good idea. And his hopes begin to soar, but I can just imagine that he was disappointed once again as they only pulled him out to sell him to a slave trader. And he had to be disappointed when he realized this slave trader was taking him further away from his family and deep into the heart of Egypt. And he had to be disappointed when in his new master's house he was falsely accused of rape and wrongly imprisoned. Had to be disappointed. He had to be disappointed that when he made a friend, the former cupbearer to Pharaoh, and he interpreted a dream for this man, and the man said, when I'm released from prison, I won't forget you and I'm going to help you get out. And yet, Joseph remained in prison long after the cupbearer was released. Disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. Always, it was just seems like disappointment was chasing Joseph down. But all of those disappointments were not wasted in Joseph's life. None of those disappointments were wasted in his life, because all of those disappointments were used to propel him into his destiny, because Joseph chose to partner with God in every disappointment. And he testifies to this in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, when he says to his brothers, the one who started all of the avalanches of disappointment that crushed him, he says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. And he brought me to this position so that I could save the lives of many people. In other words, Joseph was saying, as God used all of those disappointments as stepping stones to bring me to where I am today, which was the palace, which was second in command to Pharaoh, which was the one who was in charge of their agricultural and economic system. He left the prison and went to the palace. He didn't go to rehab. He didn't go to vocational training. He didn't go to a halfway house. He left the prison and went to the palace. And that's because he had purposed to partner with God in every single one of those instances and refused to become depressed or disillusioned and refused to become bitter or angry or resentful. There's a lot of other stories too, like the one of Jairus. I'm sure that Jairus was disappointed when his daughter died. You see, his daughter had been very sick, and he had heard that Jesus was in town. Jesus was a healer, and he thought, I'm going to go find Jesus and bring him to my house and ask him to heal my daughter. So he tells his family, this is where I'm going. And he leaves his home and he goes out into the streets of his city and he finds Jesus. And he approaches him and he said, my daughter is sick. I know you're a healer. Will you come and heal? And Jesus said, absolutely, let's go. And so they head off to Jairus' home. However, in the meantime, a woman who had lived her life full of disappointment, 12 years she had been sick, had seen every doctor she could find, had spent all of her money, and experienced disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. She found Jesus in the street. She didn't want to be noticed, and so out from the fringes of the crowd, she reached through and she touched the hem of his garment, his tallit, his tzitzit, his prayer shawl. And from that, the healing power of Jesus flowed into her, and he recognized it, and he said, wait, hold on a second, we have to stop. I need to know who just touched me. And she didn't want to admit that right up front. And so that took a while. And I can imagine Jairus is standing on the edge going, yeah, that's nice and wonderful. And you got your thing, but I need my thing. Let's go. I need you to come now. I need you to come. And he probably stood there sweating bullets, waiting for all of that to get resolved, anxiously waiting as someone from his home approaches him and said, don't worry about it. Don't trouble the teacher anymore. The rabbi no longer needs to come because your daughter's dead. Can you imagine the disappointment he must have felt? I had it. It was right there. It was right there in my hands. And it just slipped away from me, and now she's gone. I imagine that Mary and Martha felt the same way. Really great friends with Jesus, their brother Lazarus. Jesus spent a lot of time inside their home. They had become good friends, and they were not just fringe followers, but they were on the inside. They were really doing this thing, running hard after Jesus. And so one day when Lazarus gets sick, they're thinking, I know exactly what to do. I've seen Jesus work. I've seen Jesus move. And this sickness that our brother has, it looks like he could die from this. We'll send for Jesus. He loves us. He'll come. He will come and heal Lazarus for us. And so they sent word for Jesus, full of hope, full of expectation. I've seen him work. I know his heart. He'll come through for us. And I can imagine as day after day after day passed and Jesus didn't show up, as their hopes begin to deflate and their hearts begin to sink, and how they must have fallen into despair when Lazarus took his last breath. They'd heard he'd raised some people from the dead. Maybe he would come this afternoon, and it still wouldn't be too late. But day one, day two, day three, day four in the grave, their hearts must have been shattered into a million pieces. I imagine Lazarus laying on the bed. As his life is ebbing away from him, the last thought, give me liberties here, as I'm reading, I'm just dramatically interpreting. He's laying on the bed and he knows that his sisters have sent for Jesus. And as his life is slipping away, I can imagine maybe his last conscious thought would be, I thought he'd come. I thought for sure he'd come. Where is he? Why is he not here? I don't understand. This doesn't sound like him. This doesn't seem like him. I thought he'd come. But you understand that these situations were not breeding ground for disease. They became breeding grounds for miracles.
Come on. Yes.
And it's all because they waited on his timing. And they let Jesus do it his way. He stepped into dead situations and breathed life into them, as both Jairus' daughter and Lazarus were raised from the dead. I'm sure that the disciples were disappointed when Jesus died. Totally not what they expected. Yeah, they'd heard him say some stuff about sacrifice and suffering and some stuff about death, but that seemed really dark. And we're not paying attention to that too much because we've connected with the truth that he is Messiah. And we know what Messiah is supposed to do. We've got expectations. We've been taught. And Messiah is coming and he is going to establish his kingdom with great authority and crush our oppressors and raise Israel back to its glorious place that where it was when David and Solomon ruled. Oh, well, okay, yeah, death. But this is what it's supposed to look like. High hopes, great expectations, amazing anticipation of what Jesus was going to do. And I can just imagine the shocked look on their face when the guards arrived to arrest him at the garden. Okay, momentary setback, not a big deal. He is Messiah. He's going to come through. I can imagine that their hearts sunk when they realized that he had been convicted. I can imagine the desperation they must have felt when they saw him dragging his cross through the streets of Jerusalem, bloody and beaten and disfigured beyond recognition. I can imagine that all hope inside of them were smothered as discouragement crushed them when they saw him take his last breath on the cross. This is not what they expected. This is not what they had been told. This is not what they were looking for. But you got to understand that it was their greatest disappointment that enabled them to step into their destiny. Because the death of Jesus made way for their empowerment. The death of Jesus enabled Holy Spirit to come and fill them and consume them. And that launched them into their calling and purpose. And you today, thousands of years later, are living in the wake of the fulfillment of their destiny. Those men turned the world upside down and it was birthed out of their greatest disappointment. So you need to understand, disappointment is very powerful. It has the power to breed disease, or it has the power to breed miracles. And when you put your disappointment in the hands of Jesus, it is never, ever wasted. That's the promise of Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love Him and who are called according to His purpose. What that means for you is when you are in relationship, so listen, here's the deal. You can't use this verse if you're not in relationship. And you can't use this verse if you're not running after His heart. But if you are in relationship with Father God through Jesus Christ, and you are following Him, you are in sync with Him, your heart is connected to Him, you can be assured that every single detail of your life is continually being woven together to fit into God's perfect plan to bring good into your life. Every single thing. The word every is the Greek word pause, and it means all of the components that make up the thing and the thing itself. No limitations, no restrictions, no loopholes. Everything. Your greatest disappointment or your most insignificant disappointment. He's working it together for your good. That means that what the enemy is using to try to crush you and destroy you with now becomes the platform that God launches you from. Yes. See, we've been thinking that disappointment is so horrible. No, no, no. Disappointment's actually a good thing for us. But here's the catch. You have to work through it with Jesus. You got to stay in the process. You have to work through it. You can't just fold up your arms and sit down on the side of the road and say, that's it, I'm done, whatever. Because if you do that, you've disengaged from the process, thereby removing the possibility of God doing something in your life with it. If you want something done with your disappointment, you have to stay in it and then work through it. You see, if you try to handle disappointment all by yourself, it's going to crush you. And I don't care how old you are or how long you've been journeying with Jesus or how many times you've been disappointed, you are still inexperienced. You are still a novice because you're coming up against the enemy of your soul who is crafty and wise and deceptive and whose intent is to capitalize on your disappointment to derail you and stop what God is doing in your life. He's sneakier than you think he is, and he can do more than you think he will. And so if you're not partnering with God, then you are going to experience emotional and spiritual disease because it's the breeding ground for disease, right? And the results are you're going to disconnect, and you'll miss all of the treasures that are found inside disappointment. Remember what Bill's been telling us the last 2 weeks. That the benefit, or the blessing rather, the blessing of the process is not the end result. That's a benefit and it's nice, but that is not the goal. The goal is actually found in the process. Let's go back to our teething example. The goal is not a mouthful of teeth. Teeth are great. Spiritual teeth are necessary. We want spiritual teeth, but that is just a benefit because now we can ingest and digest deep, meaty spiritual things and we can walk in the supernatural. That's what the teeth are for. But the rewards come in the gnawing, slobbering, sobbing, painful process of the teeth coming in. That's where you get the rewards. That's where inside your disappointment, Jesus is like a treasure hunt. And he has treasures hidden and tucked away inside your disappointment that he wants you to find. But if you jump out of the process or you try to just pretend like it didn't happen, brush it off, ignore it, okay, whatever, and just move on, you're trying to circumvent that, just leapfrog over it, and you miss all the good stuff. It's like eating a cream horn and just nibbling on the ends and not getting the cream. Right? That's exactly what that's like. So you've got to work through with it. You've got to work through Jesus with it. So if you don't take anything away from today, I hope you get this one thing right here. Write it down. Get your stuff out. Write this down. When you experience disappointment, you have to embrace it. As painful as it is, you have to embrace it, because in your willingness to engage, God can do some amazing things in it and in you and for you. So don't ignore it. Don't disengage from it. Instead, grab your disappointment and look it square in the face, and then take it to Jesus and sit down in his lap and work your way through that. Do you remember just a moment ago I quoted to you Proverbs 13:12, and I said unrelenting disappointment leaves you heartsick? Okay, well, the second part of that verse is, but a sudden good break can turn life around. A sudden good break can turn life around. When you navigate through disappointment with Jesus, he gives you a good break, or could we say he gives you a breakthrough?
Come on.
Breakthrough comes as you are willing to navigate through disappointment with Jesus, and it can turn your life around. It can change the trajectory of your life. Can you imagine what would have happened if Jairus had seen this whole encounter with the woman who had the issue of blood, and it halted what he thought was supposed to be happening? And instead of just standing there and waiting, when he heard, your daughter's dead, forget it, forget you, forget it all, whatever. You could have and you didn't. You let that whole mess get distracting you, and so I'm done. What would have happened? No breakthrough. Can you imagine what would have happened to Joseph if, when he had despaired so greatly when he got sold into slavery, if he had let himself become the man that Potiphar's wife wanted him to be, and he slept with her? See, that's why he got accused of rape. It's because he refused to sleep with her, because he said, I'm a man of God, and this is not what women, not men of God do. Don't do this. And I won't partner with that. I've partnered with God in my disappointment. Can you imagine what would have happened if he would have said, what difference does it make anyway? I'm never going to have a life of my own. I'm never going to have a wife of my own. I'm just a slave. I'm stuck where I am. Who cares anyway? I should be able to have a little fun. And he disengaged from the process. What would have happened? What would have happened to the disciples when they saw Jesus hanging on the cross and all of their hopes they thought were dying with him, and they said, that's it, and they got on a donkey and rode out of town and went to the Far East and decided, I can't believe anything anymore. I'm completely disillusioned. They would have missed what came in the book of Acts. They would have missed seeing the resurrected Jesus. They would have missed everything if they had disengaged from the process. So don't bail. Persevere.
Yes.
Persevere. That's what Holy Spirit is encouraging us to do in James chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. He says, persevere. Endure. Hang in there. So that in your endurance you may be made mature and complete, and you won't lack anything. You won't lack anything because you got all the good stuff out of the disappointment.
Yes.
There's stuff in the disappointment that you're not going to get anywhere else. There are things that you're going to learn about God and discover about his nature and his character that you will not find anywhere else. Don't bail. And as you are hanging in there, anchor your hope in him. The disciples nearly made a fatal mistake by anchoring their hope in what they'd always been told. This is what Messiah will do when he comes. And this is what it's going to look like. And so when Jesus wasn't operating according to their expectations, and almost threw them for a loop because they were hoping in what they'd been told and not hoping in him. Anchor your hope in him. Hebrews 10, verse 23. It says, so now, wrap your heart tightly around the hope that lives within us, knowing that God always keeps his promises. I was talking to somebody this week about living on the rock. You know, Jesus is the rock, right? The wise men built his house upon the rock, the parable that Jesus told, and Jesus is the rock. And I can just imagine, as I was studying through this over the last couple of weeks, I just got this picture, and I shared it with them this week, of living on the rock and having your feet on the rock. And that sounds really awesome, which is where your feet are supposed to be. But I can just imagine, as I'm standing on top of a rock and the storm starts to come and the rain starts to just pour down and the wind starts to blow, if I'm just standing there in my bare feet and I'm not anchored in, that rock could get slick. And I can just imagine trying to keep my toes wrapped around this rock as I'm like this. You know, like a Weather Channel kind of storm. You know what I'm saying? I'm Jim Cantore, and I'm trying to keep my footing on there. And when I'm reading this verse and he says, wrap your heart tightly around the hope that lives in you. What is the hope that lives in you? Jesus. He's our rock and he's our hope. Right? And he says, wrap yourself tightly around Jesus. So if he's the rock, and I'm supposed to be living on the rock, but I'm supposed to be wrapping myself up in the rock, I see, he shows me this picture of being embedded in the rock. Hiding the word, which is Jesus, in my heart. Intertwining myself with the word, weaving it into the very fabric of my existence as it becomes a part of my thought processes, as it becomes my default setting. Every single day, knitting that into every aspect of my existence, I get deeper and deeper. I get more entrenched in the rock. And I could see a picture of myself with the rock. I'm into the rock from my feet to my hips. Let the storm blow then. Let the hurricane come. My hair can stand on end and my face can look like Jim Cantore's. I'm not going nowhere. I'm not going nowhere because I'm unmovable from here down. Because I've wrapped myself in the hope. And when disappointment comes, it won't take me years to work through that. It'll just take me a little bit to process through that with Jesus. Because I've anchored myself in what God promised. I have hooked myself to what he said. I have just delved into his character and his nature. I've plunged headfirst in. And I have decided, I have refused to dwell on what did not happen. And y'all, I got a bunch of stuff that did not happen. And I've spent part of my life in the shoulda, woulda, couldas. And this is as far as I go. But when I severed that, I processed through it. I left it with Jesus. And I'm not looking to the left, and I'm not looking to the right, and I'm not looking to the back, but I'm looking square at his face. Don't anything else matter? Nothing else matters. I've chosen to remember who he is. He is faithful and true. And I have chosen to believe what he said. All 7,000 promises are yes and amen inside Jesus Christ. Experiencing disappointment is inevitable, but living in discouragement is a choice. You choose whether your disappointments are detrimental or beneficial. You choose whether your disappointments become a breeding ground for disease or a breeding ground for a miracle.